Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
The British pop singer Ray became one of the top 200 most listened to artists on Spotify by releasing a number of hit singles over the past few years. But her label hasn't let her release an album despite signing a four-album deal back in 2014. But to their credit, Polydor, that's the label, they allowed Ray to leave her deal and she's now free to pursue a career as an independent artist. But what about those who end up trapped, unable to release the music that they pour their hearts and souls into? Well, journalist Louise Bruton is on the line now to give us an insight into pop stars that have been left in limbo by their label. Number one, phone line one, is it? Yeah, hello. Hello, Louise. Oh, external one, sorry. Hello, Louise, can you hear me? Yeah,
I can. Do you hear me?
Very good, very good, very good. Okay, phew. Okay, so you get a bit confused with all the different Zooms and phone lines and tie lines and everything else. So listen, look, I mean, let's face it. I don't think I've ever met anybody in the music industry or in the music business or making music that hasn't at some stage made a mistake, been ripped off, done the wrong thing, shouldn't have signed that and whatever. But at the same time, can I ask the question, I mean, how long has this type of scenario been happening? I mean, surely at this stage, there should have been a sea change.
Well, like, it's fair to say that, like, as long as record labels and contracts have been in existence, there has been an artist who has been screwed over somehow. And this can be not getting all the money that they're owed, or it can be a case of not being credited on the songs that they've contributed to. And two of the biggest cases, which we'll go into a bit more later, will be Prince and George Michael, who had huge court cases over this very issue. And it kind of goes to show that if names as big as them have huge problems with their contracts, then it's easy to see how kind of smaller artists like Ray will still kind of get in trouble like that. So what happened with Ray was she is a songwriter to the stars. So she's written for Beyonce, Little Mix and Anne-Marie, and she has done well for them. She's let these other artists earn themselves big money. And herself, she's released about 20 singles, 5 EPs. And this year she's the vocalist on the song Bed, which is huge this summer. It's a real kind of low volume kind of pop song. It's huge in the charts. It's been sitting in the top 20 for the last 5-6 months. But even though she keeps having success as a songwriter and as a solo artist, just with her singles and her EPs, there is just no sign of an album happening. But she was lucky enough to be able to tweet her frustrations. And instead of getting a lot of bad press for Polydor, they kind of just mutually went their separate ways. So now Ray can go on and release her own music herself. But before that, nobody had Twitter. They had to go to the courts of law to actually kind of break free from any kind of difficult contracts. It's a regular thing that does happen where people are stuck in the role of songwriter for bigger artists. And when that happens, their own careers are kind of put on hold. But like, that's not the only way. Like, that's obviously not the only reason that people kind of get screwed over. It's they can be signed too young and they can't keep up with the pace. And then the label just wants to kind of earn more money rather than invest in the well-being of the artist. And that puts the likes of, say, the X Factor kind of to a bad standard, where they were kind of doling out contracts every year to kind of young artists with no experience at all in this. And recently, Little Mix, who won X Factor 10 years ago, it's actually their 10-year anniversary kind of in range the next couple of months, they spoke out about the lack of creative control that they had with the label Psycho, which is the X Factor Simon Cowell label.
Cowell, yeah.
Yeah, and they have since gone on to talk about the sexism within the industry and the lack of creative control. But then today, actually, Jessie Nelson, who's a former member of Little Mix, she's gone on to say that since they left the label, they hadn't had creative control. And that's kind of what made her leave the band. So there can be also kind of internal conflicts with band members.
Okay, when you say they hadn't had creative control, I mean, here she is splashed across today's Guardian. Jessie Nelson, why I really had to quit Little Mix. That's on the front page there. But I mean, the point about it is that they hadn't creative control. But did they sign something to say that they were never going to get creative control?
Well, it's kind of hard to know. Like, creative control will mean a different thing for every kind of artist. And within Little Mix themselves, they do actually have songwriting credits on all of their songs. And two of the members, Leanne Pinnock and Jade Thirlwall, the two of them have actually got independent songwriting contracts themselves. So not only do they write for Little Mix, they also write for other artists. So the way that a lot of artists actually do get stuck is you'll get your singing contract, but you can also get a songwriting contract, which can often mean it's a much steadier income. If you are an artist, and that's kind of why if you are a smaller artist, it's probably easier to stick with the songwriting publishing contract than it to go forward with the singing contract.
Well, you know, there's the thing here, like, you know, maybe we should be, the real question should be, what about this album business? I mean, I know it was a 4-album deal for Yvonne Ray, who, by the way, I've never heard of her. I mean, she's that big, is she?
Right. Like, she's big, and but she's good as well. Like, I think a lot of people will easily dismiss any of these artists as not being good enough. And Ray is actually in my kind of top 10, top 20 songs of the last few years.
Okay, but Ray, like, has this 4-album deal, is what you're saying. And maybe we should look at the whole idea of the album. Like, there is a thing where even now, like, no matter who's making music at all, the album is still important. It makes the statement about who people are. I have an album out. And if you want to kind of discover my whole oeuvre, then releasing a single every so often is never going to kind of really do it. This is the statement. This is what it's about. And maybe it shouldn't be about that. I mean, it is often about branding and merchandising and kind of licensing and live stuff, etc. Maybe the album really shouldn't have the kind of importance it does.
Well, when you look at the amount of time it actually goes to putting in an album, so like when an artist signs like a 4-album deal or a 7-contract deal, that doesn't mean 4 years of their life. That could be 8 years of their life, depending on how long it takes. And like, there is like there's such a dangerous thing to assume that that's what you want to be doing for the rest of your life. Like, a huge example of this is the singer JoJo.
Oh yeah, 12 years of age, was it?
12 years of age, right. When she was signed in 2003 to Blackground Records, which was the label that Aaliyah was initially signed to as well. So she became the youngest artist ever to have a number one on the Billboard chart with the song, with 2004's Leave Get Out. Mm. And she had released a second album after that, but her career completely stalled. Now, she was maybe 15 at this point where her career was stalling, but her label Blackground Records, they were doing nothing to promote her career, but they wouldn't let her out of her 7-album record deal.
Okay, so let's take a look at that. What's that about? I mean, like, there's all sorts of great sort of gung-ho-ness, and they sign a deal, she gets number one, it goes really good. Is it a lot of the time, and I know it is definitely part of it all, that the person who signs you to the record label leaves the record label and you might as well go to the dustbin with the other person, that kind of thing?
Well, I think it's more just about money, because if they say, with the case of JoJo, she did really well. Like, this isn't a case of she had a slump in her career whatsoever. But if they let her go, then they have to part with a lot of money, and they could see then a rival kind of label getting success from her success that they created in the beginning. So, like, it's very murky, especially when, because there was a huge trend of signing very young artists, and it's a trend that's coming back again when you see the likes of Billie Eilish and Olivia Rodrigo. And JoJo kind of did an interesting thing, because there was a free JoJo campaign, because she wasn't even in her 20s when she was trying to break free of this contract, that she couldn't work at all outside of this, because her name was just firmly associated with this, so she couldn't release money as release music as anything else. And in 2013, 10 full years after she was signed, she was only 22. She filed a lawsuit against her label for irreparable damages to her professional career, because the momentum was gone. And that was something that she was working hard with, because she came in like a flash, and she should have had a big career, and she should have a big career now. But she lost those kind of early years just being stuck and fighting in legal cases.
Every time we look at a story like this, the thing that comes out, the entity that comes out of it worst most of the time is the record label. And maybe that's a bit unfair, because, you know, for instance, how often has it happened when an artist leaves a label, they don't have to pay back the advance, maybe, or something like that. And the advance, like, a lot of money sometimes is put into, obviously, to people who just don't get anywhere or do anything. And, you know, who picks up the tab? The record label.
Well, yeah, like I suppose it's maybe when the record label, when big money was going around kind of up until the late 90s, I'd say probably the last big kind of record deals would probably be in around the kind of Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys kind of time. But because, like, say, Mariah Carey, now she had one of the biggest records. She had one of the, like, the biggest kind of record deals kind of ever made. She was initially with kind of Sony and Columbia for her first maybe 6 or 7 albums. But she was married to the head of Columbia, who was Tommy Mottola. So when their marriage began to fall apart in around 1997, she felt as if she was being neglected by the label, which, if you're looking at a divorce between her and the head of the label, that's obviously something that's going to happen. But she believed with her last album on the Columbia label, Rainbow, she felt that she was being badly marketed. And then she was trying to kind of let people know. She was posting cryptic messages on her website about herself and the label. But then in an attempt to get out of Sony, she signed on to Virgin, who are obviously, it's like a huge, they're two big competing labels. And it was one of the biggest record deals of all times. And they signed her on for 4 albums of new material. But they had 7 million of money that she could not get out of, that they had to pay to get her out of the Sony and Columbia contract. But then when her personal life kind of fell apart in around 2001, which was the absolute triple whammy of the release of her film Glitter and its soundtrack, which were both commercial flops and critical flops, but they were also released the same week as 9/11. And around this time, Mariah Carey, she actually entered rehab for exhaustion, and she said that she was being worked to the bone. And in her memoir that was released last year, she said that she actually ran away. She just disappeared so that no one from work could find her, because I think she said she was awake for about 5 days or something, doing music video shoots. She was doing interviews, and she just didn't have any time to sleep. So she was hospitalized as a result of being overworked. And then Virgin, having just signed one of the biggest record deals of all time, had to cut their losses. They paid Mariah Carey $28 million to sever all ties. And that's when Mariah's contract was then bought out by Island and Def Jam for $24 million. So that's like so much money. And it didn't, when they signed her on initially for 7 album record deal, how could you factor in the fact that she would then have a huge kind of, her life would fall apart? So when you're looking at an artist versus human things that do happen, it's very hard to kind of be like, you agreed to do 7 albums with us.
Yeah. By the way, we are talking to Louise Bruton. 51552 is our text. And we're kind of looking at pop stars in limbo, or with contracts that don't really do them an awful lot of good. What about Sugar Babes? Were they also the victim of just being too young?
Well, Sugar Babes is a very interesting one, because Sugar Babes, they were signed in 1998 when they were 13 years old. And a big part of how they were marketed was the fact that they were very serious teenagers who released music that appealed to the pop charts and also indie fans. Like, they were very cool. That was like their big whole thing. But in 2000, just after the release of their debut album, One Touch, one of the members, Siobhan, she was the first to leave, and she was replaced in by another member, Heidi. Then another original member, Mucha, then left, and she was also replaced by a different member. And then when the third and final original member left in 2009, she was then replaced by another
member. Hold on a second. What does that do to a contract if the Sugar Babes, who were signed A, B and C, are now D, E and F?
So Sugar Babes, by law, existed, but it had no original member left whatsoever. So like, that kind of begs the question of, like, what is Sugar Babes? Like, when you see, like, a good example is, like, say when you see Queen perform live now, it's Queen with Adam Lambert. They can't be advertised as Queen. It has to be mentioned that it's Adam Lambert, even though we know that Freddie Mercury is dead. So, like, that's, it's all about kind of the way that things are named. So in the case of the Sugar Babes in 2010, Mucha applied to the European Trademarks Association for the ownership of the group's name, claiming, well, we are the Sugar Babes and these three women aren't. She didn't win that. She didn't win the group's name, but she was able to claim back the band's name and obtain rights to paper, to cardboard, to goods, to stationery, paper gift wrap. So that was just a very murky thing, and it was a weird loophole that was in their contract, which, of course, when they were signing, when they were 13 years old, they weren't going to be like, oh, of course, we must keep our name on paper and wrapping paper.
So, like, I mean, I presume anyway, like, the whole idea of artists or bands or whatever joining a major label, that used to be the dream. That may not be the right way to go now. In fact, it almost definitely isn't.
No, well, like, it's, I think people are a lot wiser now. When they know to read the fine print, like, there's how many movies do we see about, like, someone's singing career just falling apart because they haven't read the fine print? But there have been, like, huge cases, like, as we kind of mentioned before, with Prince. He brought his whole fight with his contract into a part of his career by changing his name. So he would have been Prince. And then when he wanted out of his Warner Brothers contract in 1993, that's when he started releasing music as The Love Symbol. And as he was fighting in court against Warner Brothers, he was able to release music as Prince and the New Power Generation as a side project, so that he could actually release, keep ongoing and release music. And what he was objecting to was the speed in which his music was being released, because he wanted more time. And as we all know with Prince, he's a lengthy musician. Like his music goes on, and he didn't like the speed of that Warner Brothers wanted to release his albums, and he objected to the release of greatest hits albums. And then to kind of go against that, he then sped up his own releases so he could get out of his contract quicker. Which is also, it's a thing to watch out for. If you do see an artist who is just like drilling out the albums, it's a case of them maybe wanting to speed up so that they can move on elsewhere.
I mean, and he even toured and called himself the artist formerly known as Prince, which leads me, of course, to say that Meatloaf had a problem with his record label too, and he was the artist formerly known as Mince. Hey! Anyway, let's come back to more modern pop artists then. Sorry, I'm sorry about that, folks. Look, okay, I don't know if they're laughing or if they're going, oh no, he didn't say that, did he? Megan Thee Stallion, and is it Tinashe or Tinashe, is it?
Tinashe, yeah. So this, again, is one of those tricky things where, so Megan Thee Stallion, 2020 was really her huge, massive breakout year. She's had massive songs with Cardi B and Beyonce. But when she signed over to Roc Nation in 2020, which is a label associated with Jay-Z, it became clear that her old label wouldn't let her actually move on. And in her contract, and she was very clear in this, she said that she read the contract, but she didn't understand the language, which I know when anybody has to sign a contract for new jobs or whatever, half the time you're like, I don't actually understand this. I'll just sign the line. So on her previous label, 60% of her revenue from all of her recordings and 30% of her revenue from tours and merch all went back to her label. So she was only earning, she had only been paid 15,000 to date from her old label, even though now she is like the hot name. She is the hot name in hip hop to have feature or to have leading a single. And a similar thing would have happened with Tinashe. Now, Tinashe is one of these pop artists who I adore. And when she released her debut album, Aquarius, in 2014, I was certain, I was like, she is going to be the biggest name in pop oncoming. So she signed a 7-album record deal at RCA, and she had huge singles from that album. But whatever happened in the background, her label just kept delaying her following two albums. And she said herself that they were low-key sabotaging her art. And she said that it was disappointing. And to kind of put kind of the fire underneath her labels to prove that she was popular, to prove that she was successful, she started leaking her own music.
Low-key sabotaging her art. But I mean, if it was working, why the hell would the record company think of doing something like that?
It's a bizarre thing, because it's maybe just not wanting to actually kind of come up with a whole new marketing campaign for an artist. But when you don't trust that the artist knows what they're doing, maybe you just don't listen to them. So she just kind of maybe went two steps ahead of them, and she just proved to them just like that the music is wanted. But she ended up leaving that label. She left the label in 2019 after kind of she only got 3 albums out of her 7 albums with RCA. And now she's left her album, and she's released 2 albums independently, and they've done critically incredibly well.
Do you know George Michael? Wasn't he kind of plagued with this problem throughout his whole career?
Yeah, so George Michael kind of he had that thing where he had to he was the Wham pop star, and he sorry, just looking for the it's all legal cases here now.
But I mean, he really, it always seemed to be weighing on him. I mean, it really was his solo career. It just weighed him down.
Yeah, so he wanted to basically to not be the sex symbol that he was known as kind of through Wham. And he brought them to court. He brought Sony to court in 1994, where it was that thing where artists shouldn't have to stay within those huge contracts. And if he had won that case, that would have meant that we wouldn't have seen the likes of kind of JoJo being stuck in a 7-album deal. We wouldn't have seen the likes of Mariah Carey be stuck in this. But he didn't win. And it was all just about kind of his ownership. He wasn't kind of happy with his name. He wasn't happy with the position. He wasn't happy with how he's been treated. And as we know, kind of during a lot of George Michael's career, he he was confronting issues with his sexuality and with his own personal health and his other successes. And he described what he was stuck in as professional slavery, because it meant that he had no control over the music. And all of this actually kind of led to what his song Freedom is all about.
Yeah.
And you know, but he, in 1995, even though he lost the case, and this was a huge case, even though he lost the case in 1995, he was signed to Sony, and his contract was then sold on to Virgin and DreamWorks, who were huge, huge competing labels. And George Michael was able to get in on this sale, and he was able to co-own the music with his own label with that music. So there was a huge amount of money, a huge amount of press. He still lost. But even in this loss, he was able to get back in and own some of his own music, because a lot of the time it comes back to ownership, and that.
Well, then, depending how your career is going or not going, I mean, you have to understand the whole idea of compromising on your artistic vision or the record company on their money at some stage, and maybe try to meet in the middle. I mean, I would assume one of the biggest examples of the last 10 years has got to be Taylor Swift and all the stuff she's had in terms of. Scooter Braun now owns all our music from Bandithoff, the other guy, Scott, whatever his name is, and all the rest. But I mean, like, you know, tell me, like Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, they have a lifetime of problematic experiences with labels, don't they?
Yeah, so this is probably a more unusual case where so Snoop and Dr. Dre were part of Death Row Records, and they Dr. Dre especially was a huge part of the kind of foundations of that label. But as Death Row Records and the head of the label, Suge Knight, became involved in more criminal activity. And Suge Knight was also a main suspect in the murder of Tupac. Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg didn't want to be associated with the criminal behavior and of their label and the associated acts. And even though they had released, Dr. Dre had released The Chronic.
The Chronic was like 30 years ago now, and it was one of the biggest of its time. And what happens? He's got to give that away in order to stay away from the lifestyle he didn't want, so he doesn't get the money out of it now. Is that it?
He doesn't get the money out of it, but what had happened recently in it is it's only since 2011. So that album was released in 1992, and it is one of the biggest rap albums of all time. It is huge. It's monumental. It's historic. But it's only since 2011 that he now owns the digital rights of that album, and all sales go directly to him only through online sales. However, the label Death Row still owns money that will come from CD, vinyl, cassette, and 8-track sales, because that was what was in the original contract. So Dr. Dre, of course, has gone on to massive success since Death Row. Like, he founded Aftermath Records and he discovered Eminem. So he financially was doing fab. But Snoop Dogg, on the other hand, because he had released his two debut albums in Death Row, and he didn't receive any royalties from those albums. Mm. And he was a young artist. And for maybe 10, 15, 20 years after that, he's almost been trying to earn back all of the money that he should have been earning. So that's why you would see Snoop Dogg maybe seeing kind of like partnerships with Justice.ie or that kind of thing. Yeah. Like he has to earn his money from something other than music.
And just finally, what do you call it? Alia's music is back, isn't it?
Yeah, that like as of yesterday.
Yeah.
So this year will mark 20 years since her death. And to date, her debut album was the only album that was on any streaming services. So that's AJ Nothing But a Number. So she was signed to Blackground Records, which was run by her uncle. And there seems to be a conflict between her uncle and then her immediate family and the Aaliyah estate, where he held on to the rights of all of her music and just was keeping them to himself. And it's such a shame, because if you didn't buy her CDs when she released them in 2000 and 2001, you would never have heard the music of Aaliyah. But her music is going to be released in phases across Spotify. So this month we have 1 million, which is, as of yesterday, now up on Spotify, that her uncle has now released. But it is also to the conflict of her family. So that is also kind of a murky area in terms of what happens to an artist after they die, which, again, we're also seeing with Prince, they're releasing all of his demos, all of kind of original materials, which is probably something that he didn't want.
It's a minefield, I can tell you. If you're thinking of signing anything, make sure you know what you're doing, bluntly. That's the way to put it. Journalist Louise Bruton, thanks a million, Louise, for joining
thanks,
us on the programme today. Good luck. Take it easy.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.